Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Massive Breakdown Podcast. This is episode 13. I am Mercules, and it is a wonderful Monday evening. Trials came about for the first time since Rise of Iron this weekend, so we're going to have a lot to talk about. We're going to do some tips and tricks, not anything too major. We're going to save that for another episode, but just some quick pointers that might help you guys out if you're just getting into it. We're going to have a pretty in-depth discussion with Cougar about his trials experiences this weekend. He played a hell of a lot. So I guess with that in mind, let's go ahead and get started. Kutch, Cougar, how are you two guys doing today?
Oh, fantastic. Ready to dive into another week of Destiny, and kind of took some time off this past week and spent some time with my wife and my daughter, and spent some time with Netflix and Luke Cage. As people on Twitter know, I talked about that a little bit, and ready to dive into the raid and get some trials in tonight, and yeah.
All right, what about you, Cougar?
Doing pretty well. I finally managed to get my flawless run in today. I've got a couple stories about that. Some very, very close calls. Some that left me pretty butthurt, but we'll get into that.
The butthurt is strong in Trials. If you've been on Destiny of the Game at all this weekend, you've seen the stories of rage and DDoSers and cheaters and all kinds of things. But I was actually busy almost this entire weekend. I was telling them earlier, I was flying airplanes on Saturday, so didn't get to play much. And then Sunday, the Jaguars won their first game, so I was very, very drunk. And I don't think Trials is the best experience for me or my teammates when I'm inebriated like that. So no Trials for me this weekend. But you guys want to start with just some basic tips and tricks as a lead up to our big thing next week, where we're going to have a real hefty breakdown for everybody who wants to start getting good?
I guess let's dive into it. So we talked about this a little bit before we got started and kind of ironed out three pieces of homework for people who are really struggling in the Crucible or just getting started in the Crucible. And Cougar and Mercules, you guys can embellish these three a little bit. I'm just going to read the first one and let you guys add anything to it you would or add any explanation. Next week, we're going to be digging into each of these points in depth, but we want to get everyone kind of started, give you some time to get into the right mindset to be able to learn from that discussion. So the first thing that we want you to do this week in the Crucible, if you want to get better at PvP, and I'm going to do this myself as well, right along with you guys, run two close range weapons to force you to avoid long range encounters. So that's going to be auto rifle or hand cannon for a primary, and then shotgun or fusion for your special. So pick your favorites. I highly recommend the palindrome from what is that? The Crucible vendor has a palindrome, is that right? I've just been running with it. Yeah, I highly recommend that. There's some good auto rifles floating around there. Obviously, we talked about some of those last week, so listen to that episode or check out Mercury's breakdown on Reddit if you need some advice there. Shotgun, obviously, high impact shotgun. You want range of 30 plus, impact 68 to 70. Alternatively, I found Invective very easy to use, and you don't run out of ammo, which for a new player is very helpful. You guys have any other suggestions?
My recommendation is to go with the auto rifle shotgun. You may want to reach out and touch somebody. I can't blame you for that. But the goal here is for you to have these close range weapons. We want you to stay out of the mid to long range where you're going to be playing against sniper rifles and scout rifles. Your goal here is to be at, you know, I was going to make an inappropriate analogy, but we'll stick without that one. You want to be close enough. You want to be close enough to really just reach out and slap somebody. The whole point of having two close-range weapons is so that you stick close to another teammate. We'll get more into that next week, but you need to stick close to your team, and having two close-range weapons is going to force you to do that. Hand cannons aren't my personal choice here. They do have a little bit more range than I'd recommend for this setup, but if like Mercury said, you do want to have that little extra range so that you No, you can shoot farther than you can spit. Go with a hand cannon. Invective is a great choice. It's a high rate of fire shotgun. It is lower impact than what you would normally run, like a Party Crasher or a Matador. But the regenerating ammo, the full auto, you're really able to put down enough shots in a very small span of time to take down anyone that gets close to you. So that is a very good weapon on the ease of use scale. So definitely, if you have the Invective, pull that out. Run it with a legendary auto rifle or with a legendary hand cannon. And just stick with your team. Get kills. Get good.
And we should probably clarify the reasoning behind telling people to run two close range weapons. Like you said when you were discussing it, it's so that you stick next to a teammate. It's so that you get away from the idea of being able to sprint around the map by yourself, taking down people, you know, at all distances. So you learn the joys of team shotting and how much more quickly you can kill an enemy when you're, you know, attacking them with another teammate. You're both doing damage. It's also so you can learn the value of numbers are an advantage to you. If you're 2-on-1, you guys should win that 2-on-1 battle. If you're 1-on-2 with an opponent, you're probably going to lose that one. There's very few players out there who can consistently win when they're outnumbered. And I know you guys see those trial streamers who do like 1-on-3s and stuff like that, but the reason they're winning versus people going 1-on-3 is because the team that they're playing against is not sticking together, being organized, and pushing them the way they need to. It's because they're all coming in one at a time and you're giving this guy 3 1-on-1s in a row instead of, you know, 1 1-on-2 or 1 1-on-3. So the reason we're telling you to use these close range weapons is so you kind of get out of that lone wolf mentality. And it's really, really helpful in trials to understand the fact that you are not the only person on your team. You're not going to be carrying, for the most part, if you're learning these tips, you're not going to be carrying your team to victory. But you can help your team win. So that's why we're advising this right now.
That is exactly right.
Yeah, one, I guess maybe to close that and then move on to the next point, we're going to talk some trials meta. Cougar has a lot of good information, firsthand information on the trials meta from this weekend and probably some advice on things to look out for going forward. So for the players where this stuff kind of sounds a little basic, stick with us or maybe check out those notes. I'll try to post a link if this is too basic for you and you want to skip ahead to the trials discussion. Totally understand.
Then you're wrong.
But everyone can learn, right? We can all learn a little bit more. So anyway, number two.
Basics never change.
That's right. That's right. Always good to go back to fundamentals, and that's what we're going to do with number two. This week, we want you to record 3 games where you didn't dominate but didn't get completely destroyed. So these can be games where you struggled. They can be games where you did well. But we don't want to have you trying to learn from a game where you were playing against 6 players who were worse than you, because you're not going to learn a whole lot from how you beat them. We also don't want you to be trying to learn from a game that's just a montage of trials or of Crucible fails. It's really difficult and demoralizing, I think, to try and learn when the entire video is just watching yourself getting killed. So we want to kind of get a mixed bag. Again, it can be toward the lower end or toward the upper end of success. But just watch those videos a few times over just 3 games. Watch each video 2 or 3 times and try to find one thing that you are doing wrong in every single video. One skill that in each video you're like, oh, if I just did this thing better, all 3 of these games would have gone better for me.
Yeah, and I'm actually going to be posting a gameplay critique. It's not my gameplay. It's actually, if you guys are on Crucible the Playbook, the Crucible Playbook a lot, you probably know Gentlectual. And I've actually got a gameplay of his. It's a skirmish 3v3 on Bannerfall. That I took some notes on. I'm actually going to be doing a gameplay breakdown of it, showing you positions where he could improve, showing you what he did well. And just basically what I recommend when I look at my own gameplay, I will watch it over and over and over and over again, and I will diagnose the situation. I'll look at the radar. I'll see things that I may have missed. I'll look at how many people they have down. I'll look at how many my team has down. I'll look at where my teammates are around me, what ammo is up at the time, what ammo I have, all these things that you go through and you look at and you think, well, I just ran through that door and I knew there were going to be people on the other side. I saw them on my radar. Even if they weren't directly on the other side of the door, I knew they were going to be watching the door, why did I do that? And then next time you start to run up to that door when you're playing that map, you see red on your radar and you think, whoa, maybe I shouldn't go through that. Let's wait for my teammates to get here. Let's throw a grenade through it instead. Let's flank. You know, you start to recognize the mistakes that you're making over and over and over again when you watch your gameplay. And it really gives you a good handle on things that you're consistently doing wrong, as well as maybe what your strengths are, what you're consistently doing well. Because I think it was an old NBA coach that said something along the lines of, don't try to necessarily be a jack of all trades. Find what you do well and do it really, really well. You know, improve on it. Find what you're good at and work to be the best at that. You know, so that's just, you know, food for thought. It's not necessarily end all to beat all advice, but it's something that I've learned from watching my own gameplay.
Yeah, that's great advice. Cougar, what did you want to add there?
When I practice like this by looking at my own gameplay and picking something that I did wrong, I'm going to draw a real-world analogy to this real quick. I played high school football. I was recruited to college football at the FCS level, which is the lower level of Division I football. The way that I practiced in order to get to that level, because I'm going to be straight up, I'm a slow white kid. I didn't have the natural athleticism to do this. It had to be about technique. And the way I improved my technique was every week I would watch the film. Very first thing I would do is I would find what I did wrong. And I would look at what I did wrong and break it down to the most basic fundamental level of where it went wrong. I would figure out what fundamental skill I had failed to execute. And then I would practice that skill in exclusion to everything else until I was confident that I could execute it in a high-pressure situation. So how that translates to the game is you're going to find that skill, that fundamental basic skill that you failed to execute. You're going to isolate it. And then you're going to practice that to the exclusion of everything. I don't care what your kill-death ratio is. I don't care how many headshots you land, unless that's your goal, to land headshots. You're going to go into a game, and you're going to practice that skill alone for the entire game. And if you need to, you do it for several games until you know that you can execute it under pressure. I heard a quote, or read a quote, I don't remember which it was. An amateur practices until he can do it right, but a professional practices until he can't do it wrong. And that is the end goal here. You don't have to be a professional about it, but practice until you know you can get it right and you can do it consistently. That's the goal here. It doesn't matter what other skills were lacking. You are practicing one skill because you want to perfect that one skill. So ignore everything else while you're practicing it.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And I like especially that quote. You know, we don't all have to be professionals. This is a game. It's something that we do for fun for, you know, probably the vast majority of us. But that doesn't mean that we can't be good at it or that we don't want to be good at it. Just to kind of maybe share a little bit of my personal struggle with the Crucible, I feel like one of my biggest weaknesses is just a lack of time to practice. You know, I have a lot of commitments between work and my family and social things outside of playing Destiny. And then even then, when I'm in Destiny, you know, I like to go and I raid with my clan, I run strikes, nightfalls. So Crucible's just kind of a small part of what I do in the game and in my life in general. But that doesn't mean that I don't want to get better, that I'm not trying to get better over time. So that's a really good piece of advice, I think, to pick that one thing, because it's hard to practice everything if you only play maybe 2 or 3 hours of Crucible a week. You can't improve at everything in that time period, but you can improve at one thing. So
that's exactly right. You're taking on too much if you try to improve every facet of your game at the same time. You've got to go step by step.
Excellent.
Yeah. And people forget that there's not just people who never play Crucible and then pros. Those are the two very, very small minorities on either side. There's a huge amount of people in the middle that fall somewhere along the lines of have just started playing Crucible and don't know what the best weapons are, just use whatever they liked in PvE, or you know, are pretty good at the Crucible, but don't have the gun control, the map knowledge, the teamwork that really good pros have. But the people on either end are the vast, vast, like, tiny little minorities that everybody watches, you know, the pros because they're amazing. But when you think of the players who you know, like whose names you know, there's what, like 20, 25 of them if you really, really follow good players. And how many players do we have now in Destiny? 30 million?
Yeah.
Like, those players are the top tier, and there's not a lot of people like them. That's why the Destiny MLG tournament had 12 good players, you know? And then you look at yourself and you think, well, I'd like to strive to achieve that. But the fact of the matter is, a lot of these people play this game, you know, full time or damn near it.
Absolutely.
And you can look at them for what they do and you can learn from them, but you got to understand that there's a wide space that you have to work your way through before you get there. And there's a lot of things you have to learn. You don't just jump from, oh, I know that Hawksaw is a meta gun now, and now I'm pro. That's not the way it works. You know, you've got to work on map knowledge and map awareness. You've got to work on call outs. There's all these different things. And we're going to talk about a lot of that next week when we go into our actual, like, get good sessions. So I won't dive too much into it. But, you know, just be aware that just because you're playing in the Crucible and you're maybe not as good as you've seen some other people be, you're in great company. That's where the vast majority of us are sitting right now.
Absolutely.
So, you know, don't feel bad about not being as good as you think it's possible to be, because you'll get there, but it takes work and it takes time.
Yeah, I'm a proud member of the mediocre Crucible Players Club. We should get t-shirts, actually, because it'd be a really big club. Actually, that's a really great segue into the third and final thing that we'd like to ask everyone to do if they want to get better at Crucible this week. And that is to pick a streamer. Pick somebody who streams PvP and who's good at it. You know, don't pick somebody who streams Trials Fails. Don't watch me play Crucible. But pick somebody who's good at it. Somebody whose personality you can like or enjoy, or at least somebody who's not going to bother you. Tolerate, exactly. And what I want to recommend that you do is pay attention to their movement. Pay attention to how they move around the map. When they sprint, when they walk, when they slide, when they jump, watch that, because you can't watch them play and learn their gun skill. You can't watch them play and learn what's going on in their head. You're not gonna get that psychic feed on Twitch of, you know, that computer running and calculating super timers and grenade timers. But you can learn a lot about how to move around the maps in Destiny from these players who are at that very high level.
I mean, it's the easiest way to see how well the game can be played. It's kind of something that's funny, but when I first started playing Halo 3, the only way I knew what the peak of gameplay was when other people who were better than me beat me. I didn't know how well the game could be played until I started watching montages and stuff on YouTube. And then I realized, holy shit, there's an entire another level of, like, skillfulness to this game. It was the same thing with Super Smash Bros. I started playing on the N64 and had, you know, and thought I was really good, because I didn't lose to most of the people that I played against, you know, in a casual setting. And I thought, oh, you know, I'm great at this game. Went on YouTube, found some really good players, and was like, oh my God, this is what it's like to be good at this game. It's the same thing with streamers. You play and you think, oh, you know, I'm playing against people mostly my skill level and I win the majority of the time. Like, yeah, I'm pretty good at this game. Then you see someone like True Vanguard or Real Crafty or AE Gabriel or, you know, even Wish You Luck, any of these players who you watch stream, and you're like, this is a whole nother level of Destiny. And it really gives you something to aspire to when you see what level the game is possible to be played at. At least that's the way I feel when I watch these guys.
To add on to that, where movement is concerned, and that's a good thing to focus on. Movement, in my opinion, is the most important part about the player versus player experience in Destiny. The way you move determines if you're going to get to where you want to be before your opponent does. It determines if you're going to be where your opponent thinks you're going to be. It's really the integral facet of the Crucible is who has better movement. With that base, if you have maintained better movement throughout a match, most of the time you're going to have the better performance. So watch how these guys move. Gabriel is one of the very best Titan players in the game because of how good he is at skating. For those who don't know what Titan skating is, watch AE Gabriel. You will watch him fly around the map, touching down maybe every 3 or 4 seconds, and he's back up in the air again. And I mean, this guy spends 90% of his time in a match in the air. And he'll cross from one side of the map, he'll lap people going around the map just faster than you could even think. Trying to think of the Night Stalker to watch. The Night Stalker to watch would probably be Lupo. He does great with hunters in general, and especially Night Stalkers. And then...
yeah, I've heard that as well. I think Murdaro. About Lupo.
Yeah, Murdaro would probably be the best Warlock to watch if he's still running a Warlock. He runs a shotgun on his Warlock too, so that would tie in pretty well with our first point of close quarters weapons. You see how a real man runs a Warlock if you watch him. I know I put my stream up at the end of this. If you're looking to get better, don't watch me. I'm not that good. I'm not on the level these guys are on. I'm just trying to break into the competitive scene. These guys own the competitive scene.
That's very. I think that's true for all of us and for the vast majority of people. Those guys that you mentioned are the best of the best. They're the top 001%, you know? So if you really want to see the current skill ceiling, look at those guys. You know, we're approaching it just like everyone else. We're moving towards it, but we're not there yet.
Yeah.
You know, I know, even having watched my own gameplay enough, I've recognized things I'm doing in game that are wrong. And I'll literally do something, enter an engagement I shouldn't have, and be like, why did I do that? I knew I shouldn't have done that, which is good. I'm starting to recognize. And I think someone posted on Crucible Playbook the other day, like the steps of getting good at something. And it's like, at first, you're ignorant of so many things that you don't even know what you're doing right and wrong. And then you start to recognize when you're doing things right and wrong. And then you start to eliminate the things that you recognize that you were doing wrong. And it goes on from there. And I'm at the stage where I'm like recognizing that I'm doing things wrong and stuff like that. So it's fun. It's a fun process to go through. And it always gives you, you know, something to shoot for.
Yeah.
You know, you can set a point and say, I want to be here. I want to work on this. I want to get good at this, and then move towards it. And it's part of what keeps, you know, Destiny so entertaining for me day in and day out. We might not have a content drop for, you know, 6 months or something, but I don't care because I'm trying to get good at a particular aspect of the Crucible. And even when you get to that point, then you just move on to the next thing. It's like, you know, I wanted to get good at map knowledge. Well, now I have all the maps memorized. I know where the choke points are. I know where the engagement strategies are. Now I want to get really great at, you know, sniping or something. And you move on to that. There's an endless list of things you can work on in the Crucible. And it really, really extends the longevity of the game when you set goals for yourself like that.
If I can jump back in real quick before we move on. To everybody listening, you heard what streamers I listed. For a better list of streamers, check on Reddit on Arms Day after you hear this, because I will be corrected. People will list the sweatiest of the sweaty, and they will probably be better recommendations than what I did. I am aware of this. I know that I probably didn't pick the very best people to list, but I picked some well-known guys that are easy to find. Please don't hurt me.
That's the most timid I've ever heard you sound, Cougar.
The best way to get the right answer is to give the wrong answer.
Sometimes that's true.
At least on the internet.
It's definitely true on Reddit a lot, because if we say something wrong on Reddit,
we'll know about it.
You can guarantee someone is going to call you out on it for a fact.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And again, we need to point out that this entire segment was just a precursor, because we do want to keep this episode a little bit short. This entire segment was just a precursor to next week, where we're going to really go in depth on, you know, things that we think will help to make you a better player in the Crucible. We wanted to do, you know, just like a three steps thing today, but then we started talking about it and we realized we had about 100 steps that we were going to be able to tell you guys about. And so we said, well, let's do a little teaser today and then we'll do the full one next week. But now we're going to move on to trials, and Cougar's going to tell us about his experiences. I believe he had some good times and some bad times, and
some seriously salty times. like the time my two teammates went flawless and I went 7-1 because they started before I had my boons.
I'm sure you weren't salty about that at all, though.
Oh, no, never. I'm never salty. Ever.
Now, out of curiosity, did you run into any connection issues in your trials experiences this weekend? Were you guys kicked out of any games or?
I got kicked out almost every other run. I got kicked out of a game. That could be partially my connection. I've got a pretty good connection, though. I wouldn't be surprised at one or two runs out of a weekend, but this really was. Every other run, I did get disconnected. I got called a hacker a couple times because there is a glitch, folks. Be aware of this. If you have a lag spike and then you drop back down to normal, there's a glitch that will render you invisible to everybody. The only way you can interact with another player is hitting them with a grenade, a charged melee, or in my case, a super. To the people that I did that to, I apologize. I storm tranced an entire team and stole a round because they literally could not damage me. I didn't choose to make that happen. I just had to take advantage of it. But be aware, if that happens, know the other person is most likely not hacking. And it's really not a fun way to play. So be aware for that. And don't just start throwing angry messages out at people. You know, there are things that are out of players' control that you really can't do anything about. Neither can they.
I just want to call attention to the fact that Cougar is asking people to hold the salt here. That to me says, like, this is a serious glitch. It really is negatively affecting gameplay. And, I mean, you know, like you said, be aware.
Thankfully, it isn't super common. This is the first time in about 3 weeks that I've had it happen, but it does happen. Aside from that, the connection wasn't all that bad. I usually did get matched up with mostly green bars. Every once in a while, there'd be a red bar. And a good chunk of the time, the damage referee did seem to function as it was supposed to. Sometimes the connection is just so bad that it can't be helped. But we're not here to talk about connection. We're here to talk about trials.
Yeah, let's get into it. What's the meta looking like to you right now? Snipers, shotties?
For the most part, snipers were almost non-existent. Shotguns were the special weapon of choice. Thanks to the Matador coming back and the new Last Ditch, there are a lot of really nice shotguns out there. The Crucible shotgun's good. So for the most part, and especially with a map like this where there was so much indoors, close quarter fighting, I saw for the most part shotguns, sprinkling of snipers, even fewer fusions, and three sidearms. Most of the sidearms were the Trespasser, but most of the time I saw the Trespasser, it was on a lower skill level team. It's not that great of a gun to use. As far as primaries went, almost every single player was running either a hand cannon, usually the Vendor Palindrome, which really is a great choice.
Oh, it's so good.
Or a pulse rifle of some sort. Saw a lot of Outbreak Primes, and I've heard that it's not bad. Got killed by it a few times. The Seeker Swarm really isn't that big of a deal once you get to the higher skill level teams, because most higher level teams aren't going to stick close enough together for the Swarm to do anything. So while it is a good archetype, it does feel like kind of a waste to lose your exotic slot to it.
Sure, yeah. That makes a lot of sense, that especially when people know that it's out there, that a lot of people have it at a very high light level.
I think the light level did play a big part of that. And then as far as legendaries went, still a lot of Hawk Sauce, few B29 party favors. Mercury's last week, we talked about the Trials Pulse Rifle. I was killed by it enough times to understand that, yeah, it is pretty good. It's an excellent pulse. Few PDX 45s and Hawk Saws. But the majority were the Outbreak Prime, Grasp, and the new Trials Pulse Rifle. Speaking of Trials guns, by the way, the Trials hand cannon isn't as bad as it looks thanks to explosive rounds. We talked about explosive rounds a few episodes back. They do cause quite a bit of flinch. It was a good anti-sniper weapon.
Yeah, and similarly, I was recommending hand-loaded on that Trials Pulse last week because I thought, you know, with that archetype, the flinch is already so bad on most snipers that I didn't really think you needed high caliber rounds. But apparently from what people are telling me, because of the flinch changes, high caliber rounds makes it nearly impossible for the opponents to engage back, especially at longer distances. So take that with a grain of salt. I haven't hand tested that myself yet, so I don't know for a fact, but I guess it would make sense if flinch in general has been increased that high caliber rounds would now have more of an effect. So, you know, maybe give that a shot over hand loaded. Hand loaded, the only reason I was suggesting that is because it's going to push out the damage fall off just a teeny tiny bit. And the fact of the matter is with that archetype, you're sitting at 25 damage per headshot right now. And if you go out one notch from the damage drop off, you lose that optimal, or you can lose that optimal time to kill depending on the armor levels of the guardian that you're fighting. So the reason I suggest hand loaded is because it just gives you a few extra meters that you can get that optimal time to kill in without damage drop off coming into play. But hell, if high caliber rounds is making it impossible for people to hit you, I guess you don't really need to worry about that damage drop off anyways.
Yeah, it doesn't even matter then. So one question I had, Cougar, is what your opinion was of the new heavy, because I know you played a ton of trials, so obviously you saw a ton of heavy rounds as a result. How did those go?
For the most part, like I thought it would be, picking up heavy was almost guaranteed to win you the round. However, since there is only one heavy, I saw much, much more gunplay around the heavy box. I had several rounds in without heavy actually being pulled. On the flip side of that, even with the heavier gunplay around the box, one ballsy sprint can swing an entire round. You can go from down 1 to 3. You know, you're trying to play 1 versus 3, and you can get a ballsy sprint, you can grab that heavy, and you can flip around completely, you know, 180 and take the win away. I'll have to wait and see how the heavy looks on later maps. It was pretty decently balanced for last exit. Usually teams would get there about the same time, although I do think the inside spawn had a bit of an advantage because you could run along that inside wall and reach the doorway to the tunnel just in time to shotgun whoever came out. But depending on where this box is placed in later weeks, they really need to put some, right? Hope that they put some thought into where they placed it, because if it's unbalanced on any map, one team's always going to take it and win.
Yeah, and that's going to throw that round basically.
And hopefully they are doing some really serious testing about people sprinting to that heavy. I'm sure that they are, but you know, people are always going to find a faster way to get there. So
yeah, and they can't catch everything. That's just a fact of life.
Like how the fact that a team with Titans is going to be able to get there possibly faster if they've got a talented Titan skater than any of the other subclasses.
Yeah, that I don't even want to think about a Twilight Garrison Titan skating there. That would be rough.
And it looks like they're catering a little bit more to the casual community, where there's less of an insistence on using heavy, because at this point in time in Trials, it seems more like the team that wins the battle over heavy is going to win the round, possibly without even heavy usage. You know, if you've got both teams coming into the same area, they're going to duke it out, and the team that picks up heavy, well, by that point in time, the other team might already be down 2 players, you know? And then it's less about the usage of heavy and more about the fact that everyone's drawn to one spot on the map. They're trying to dictate where the engagement is happening, at least for that round.
Yeah. It's an interesting dynamic. I'm really looking forward to spending some more time with it coming trials weekends. One other thing that occurred to me, totally not heavy related, but I almost forgot that we're all supposed to be super salty about Thorn right now and how Thorn is just totally dominating the meta, but I don't think that actually happened. So
I saw one Thorn in the entire weekend.
I don't think even when more people have the quest, I don't think Thorn's going to be the issue that people thought it was. The DOT nerf from the artifact is one thing. That's probably going to have a minor effect. But the fact of the matter is, with the last changes they did to Thorn way back when, including the range nerf recently, it wasn't the dominant gun it once was. It was still good.
It's still the best
well-used weapon. Yeah, in competitive. But it's not head over, you know, heads and tails above the rest.
Yeah.
It's just still really good. You can compete with it with other weapons, and it's an exotic, so it takes up your slot. Not that it matters as much in trials, but, you know, I don't think it's going to be the issue that people think it is. Now, maybe when the quest drops for 100,000 people and then we see it flooded, but I think fears are overblown at this point in time.
Yeah, the big thing about the Thorn currently is that it's the max rate of fire archetype, but you can get a kill with one headshot and two body shots thanks to the damage over time. However, the artifact is going to force people to get two headshots and one body shot. So Thorn has become more situational in that you have to check the artifacts on the other team first in order to figure out if you really should be even using it or not.
Sure.
You know, do they have too much armor to tank it? Do they have the artifact that renders it useless? The tracking is still nice. The delayed health regeneration is still nice. But the biggest facet of Thorn use was being able to get an ultra quick three tap with only one headshot.
Yeah, with that being now very much more questionable whether you can even achieve it consistently, that really hurts the gun, I think, more than any range nerf or anything else that they did to it.
Yeah, it's still got great range anyway. I'm pretty sure that it is still the hand cannon with the highest range in its archetype. I don't think any low impact hand cannons, or at least not many, maybe a couple of them with rifled barrel could equal it, but I don't think any get past it.
I'd have to double check, but yeah, it's really high for that archetype.
Well, it wasn't even that too, it was the fact that it had a weird damage fall off pattern that was unique to Thorn. Even when its range was equivalent to another hand cannon, the damage fall off was starting later. And I don't know if that's because of the fact that it's an exotic, and exotics seem to be tuned a little bit differently than all the other guns. But that was in the testing that they did. I remember seeing that the damage drop off started farther out, even with a guns of equivalent range. So, you know, and that's what I thought the range nerf was for. I thought it was to bring it in line with other guns. But yeah, by itself, it still has, you know, numerically a pretty decent amount of range on it for a hand cannon.
I do believe you're right, actually.
Yeah, so definitely Thorn is still playable, but I just haven't heard any terrifying reports, any reason for panic or calling for further nerfs to the Thorn meta. Just doesn't seem like a big deal.
It's situationally dominant now, instead of completely dominant.
Yeah, kind of like the year 3 Gjallarhorn, or Gjallarhorn, if you want to pronounce that GJ as it's, I believe, intended to be pronounced in the original language.
I actually think it's Gjallarhorn. It's, yeah, neither the G nor the J are silent. You have to pronounce both of them.
Gjallarhorn, is that, is there a B in there?
We'll go with the, let's go with Gjallarhorn. I like that.
Yeah. Or the Gigglehorn. Or the tally lock or whatever it's called. I don't know.
Giggity horn.
They insist on making these names that are impossible for
me. We need to do a breakdown.
I don't even try
just the Gjallarhorn. I think we could fill 45 minutes with that. I don't know if people would listen to it. I don't think I would listen to it. But
I don't think I'd participate in it.
Anyway, I don't remember where I was going with that now. I think I was just saying kind of like the year 3 Gjallarhorn. The year 3 Thorn seems like it's going to be good, but underwhelming compared to the legend that it is descended from.
And they did some testing today and showed that in almost all instances, Sleeper Simulant is better at dealing damage to bosses. So they said it does more damage when you hit criticals. It does more damage even if you just hit the body. It does more damage even if you miss a couple of shots. I guess because you can hold more shots for the Sleeper Simulant than you can with the Gjallarhorn. And on top of that, they said there's an issue where the Gjallarhorn's Wolfpack rounds are not registering on some enemies.
That's so, not good.
Yeah. It's not all of them. It's just a few of them. But like, I think there's supposed to be like 12 of them or something. Only like 9 will hit, which decreases the total damage. So the Gjallarhorn's not going to be the dominant boss destroyer that it once was. Although I've still been having a good time in these Solar Burn heroics using it. But back to trials, because I think we're getting way far off of our intended topic of conversation here. Is there anything else about trials that you really felt like you wanted to share? Last Exit, I've heard mixed reviews about it as a map itself. Did you think it was a good trials map?
I don't think it was a bad trials map. It's middle of the pack. There are a few things that caught me a little off guard. The cap point being outside, I didn't like that. It was too easy for one team, usually the team that spawned, not by the escalators, the alpha spawn, I believe, that spawned in the broken down little parking complex or whatever it was. Usually that team could push up and force the other team back down the escalator, back into the tunnels. And then the way we'd run that situation, following getting them pushed back, is if they wanted to slow play, we would have one person watch the escalator, one person watch the tunnel door from the heavy room, and one person split off towards the alpha spawn. The person, you know, whoever was furthest away from the other team near the end of the round would go to the cap point, and then we could wait it out and force these people to come to us. Since we'd have one person on the cap, they don't get time to set up, and they have to push. And even if they kill both of us, we can make it last long enough that our third caps the flag anyway. I think I'd prefer, personally, the cap point being somewhere in the tunnels. That would really force both teams to fight over it. But that could very well just be me.
And that would play into the massive amount of shotguns you said you were seeing, too. If they put it inside on the tunnels, is what I'm saying. Outside, you'd think snipers might be a little bit more useful out there, but if they put it inside, you would have everybody rushing in with shotguns and seeing what they could do. I guess other questions about trials. You said you saw the pulse rifle quite a bit. You had some experience with the hand cannon. Did you happen to run into the sniper? Because it seems like my prediction that would be the go-to sniper has been fulfilled, and I have seen a plethora of videos of people calling it the new god role and everything like that. Did you get any experience with that?
I actually only played against it once or twice. It did seem pretty good. For the most part, I mean, I saw snipers every other team, every three teams, and usually it'd be a Devil's Dawn or, you know, once in a while an Event Horizon. But thanks to that nerf on the 31 impact subclass or archetype of snipers, everybody seems to be gravitating towards that higher impact class. I do know the trial sniper rifle, I believe it has field choke, correct? To boost up the impact. So yeah, that allows you to get a kill on supers for slightly higher armor guardians.
Yeah, it's 9 armor as opposed to 6, I think.
And that's going to catch a lot of people.
That'll catch almost everyone.
It's not even that the nerf to being able to not kill supers was a huge deal, because it doesn't happen as often as you think. It's the fact that you could do it before was a good insurance policy to have, knowing that if you heard a Stormcaller, if you heard a Blade Dancer, if you heard a Sunbreaker, not that you'd hear a Sunbreaker at this point in time that much, but if you heard one of those things, you didn't have to run away. You didn't have to retreat. You could stand your ground, and it was a high-risk play, but you knew that you could go toe-to-toe with them. And when you lose that ability, even if it doesn't happen that often, it has definitely pushed people. I've seen a lot more of the high impact snipers in the Crucible, the Devil's Dawn and the Event Horizon. And that Devil's Dawn comes with a perfect PvP roll. So why not? And the Event Horizon comes with a good one too. It doesn't have quick draw, which is unfortunate, because I feel that sluggishness in the weapon. But, you know, still though, if you haven't picked one of those up, I would definitely suggest it. They're good. And the only drawback besides the slow handling is the low aim assist. You'll definitely feel that going from like a longbow synthesis, especially if you had hidden hand, to a Devil's Dawn, which has, I think, with the sights like, or with the barrel perks, like 29 aim assist. You'll feel a little bit of the difference. They are not as sticky. And those bullets don't quite deflect as far as you'd
necessarily.
That's
what I was going to say about the Devil's Dawn, having spent a lot of time with it, mostly in PvE, but a little bit in PvP. That thing it's powerful, but it is not very forgiving, which for somebody like me who primarily shotguns is a very difficult transition to make.
Jumping in again, you mentioned Sunbreakers, and believe it or not, Sunbreakers were almost as common as Strikers this week. They're pretty good super for this map. There's lots of close quarters. You don't really have many things that can cancel out a roaming super like a Blade Dancer or a Stormcaller and still go on to kill other players on the enemy team. So the Sunbreaker with Sun Charge was highly effective. And since you've got a good grenade on that class already with the Incendiaries, it was a great, great subclass this week. And I mentioned the grenades. Grenades were absolutely brutal on this map. There were not a lot of places that you could avoid a well-thrown grenade, especially down there on the just anywhere inside. I was running storm grenades with my Storm Trance Warlock, and if you throw one of those inside the tunnel or to block off a doorway for zoning purposes, they really do put people in very, very bad situations. The tracking grenades inside, I mean, they'd follow you. Skip grenades, even without shinobus, were absolutely brutal. Since a lot of the engagements would take place in those really tiny, tight spaces on the inside, you didn't have a lot of room to maneuver to avoid those grenades. And well-thrown grenades really carried a few matches.
Nice.
Either a win or a loss.
That's good to know here.
For me, several times throughout the weekend.
That's probably a good piece of knowledge for that map in general. Just the effectiveness of grenades in those tunnels.
All right, well, we got anything else to discuss about trials, or you want to make any predictions for next week? I know we don't know the map yet, but are you thinking that the meta is probably going to stay the way it is, pretty shotgun heavy, pulse rifle, hand cannon heavy? You think anything's going to change up? You think they're going to go with a long range map next week, maybe try to force people into using the new snipers?
Even if they go to a long range map, snipers might see a little more usage, but they're not going to overtake shotguns. If it's a long-range map, I'll expect to see maybe a Mida, the Chaos Dogma. You'll see scout rifles. You'll see some of the longer-range pulse rifles, even. The Palindrome's still going to be fine if you've got the vendor roll. I'm pretty sure I could take that to Sky Shocker and still cross-map. But for the most part, you're going to see shotguns as a special weapon still. Hand cans and pulses are going to be dominant. The Mida is going to be the Mida. It's what I ran all week. I think the snipers are slowly becoming a niche weapon in the fact that they take a hell of a lot of skill to use properly now. And they always have. But I think they're slowly becoming an afterthought next to shotguns in general. They're still second behind shotguns. Fusions haven't overtaken them. Sidearms haven't overtaken them. But shotguns are back in the spotlight. They are king again.
That makes sense. I don't think sidearms will probably ever take them. Sidearms will always kind of remain like a niche weapon, which is what they should be. I don't think if we had a sidearm dominated special weapon meta, I don't know what the hell would have happened to Destiny's Crucible.
That would be weird.
Honestly, something would be horribly, horribly wrong.
Yeah.
Or for those people who like shotguns, wonderfully right. Or sidearms, wonderfully right. But yeah, I can see that. Snipers, maybe they had some issues before with being too prevalent, but I thought it was more of a factor that a lot of the population had left, and you were facing portions of the player base who were very good, had been playing for a very long time, and who were using the snipers because that was what was working at the time. Shotguns had been nerfed a whole bunch, but yeah, with the most recent changes, I go into matches and go entire multiple sets of matches without seeing a single other person sniping, and it's a little disheartening. But moving on from that, the Chaos Dogma, you mentioned that interesting weapon, the raid weapon, doesn't have a great PvP role, but because it has barrel perks that increase the impact, actually has the ability to 2-crit one body full armor guardians, which is very, very nice. So that's why you're going to be seeing a lot of that. It's the most forgiving, and on top of that, it only takes 4 body shots to kill, not 5 like a normal high impact scout. So it actually has a very fast body shot time to kill. And if you get that, like I said, the rolls are not PvP rolls at all. They're made to do DPS on, you know, high armor bosses. But the fact that you can kill someone in 4 body shots with a high impact scout is really, really nice. So if you guys have that, definitely give it a shot, especially if, like Cougar said, next week it's something like Widow's Court, one of those long range maps. Yeah, you might find yourself impressed with it.
Yeah, that is a really impressive gun. I actually need to get a hold of that one yet. I'll be looking out for it.
I'm keeping my fingers crossed. So I guess moving on from trials, then we got one more thing we want to talk about. Kit's had a little pet project that he's been working on, using some of the data that we've discovered just in our various weapon tests. And he's basically working to find a little bit better way to, I guess, use the optimal and body shot time to kills for the more discerning player, basically. Instead of saying just this is the best possible time to kill, this is the worst possible time to kill, he's actually working to find the median time to kill, something a little bit more useful for the average player who maybe doesn't hit every single one of their shots optimally in every single engagement. I know none of us on this podcast ever miss a shot.
That's true.
For those people out there who might miss a single one time, this stuff's going to help them out. So you want to go ahead and explain that?
Yeah, absolutely. Now, this is kind of a work in progress at present, but I'm planning to share it either Tuesday or Wednesday when the podcast comes out, and I'll just continue to work on it from there. So this, like you said, Mercules, this is a new project for me, just something that I felt was missing as far as guides and weapon advice and stats go in the Destiny community, was something other than just how fast can I kill someone if I land all headshots? How fast am I going to kill someone if I land all body shots? Because neither of those in the majority of situations is a very realistic scenario, right? You know, especially with, say, auto rifles, you're not going to land all headshots. Pulse rifles, most of the time, you're not going to land all headshots. Hand cannons, I mean, come on. People, you know, we can complain about the accuracy on hand cannons all day. You're not going to land all headshots. And so on and so forth. So what I've done is I put together this spreadsheet aiming to find, like you said, the median time to kill. And median, I'm trying to stick somewhat close to the dictionary definition of that here just to make it clear what I'm doing, but I'm not able to stick to it completely. So what that means, for those who don't know, it's not average per se. What it actually means is a value or a quantity line at the midpoint of observed values or quantities. So say, let's take mid-impact hand cannons, which are the most forgiving, most reliable primary, not only by optimal time to kill, but also on my sheet here as well. So with a mid-impact hand cannon, you should be getting a kill in 3 shots. Now the body shot time to kill is 4, but your optimal time to kill, if you were, say, if you landed 3 critical hits, you land 3 headshots, you're going to be killed in 0.87 seconds. So the median there is basically landing 1 or 2 headshots and then 1 or 2 body shots, so that you end up with 3 shots. And that gives you that same optimal time to kill of 0.87. So they're kind of an outlier in that. That's one thing that this sheet really highlights, is weapons that are very forgiving but still able to achieve a fast time to kill, they're going to look really good on this sheet. Whereas weapons that, say, are less forgiving are not going to look very good on this sheet. So one example of a weapon, just to pick a weapon that I know that you are a big fan of, Mercules, the high-impact scout rifle. I listed Call of Vance's Duty as an example on my sheet. The optimal time to kill there is 3 crit shots. So 3 headshots is going to get you, let's see, what is it, 0.8 seconds for your time to kill, which is just fantastic, incredibly fast. However, if you land 5 body shots, you're going to be killing in 1.6 seconds, which is just about as slow and horrible as you can possibly get, right? So the median there is to kill in 4 shots, which is, you know, a number that you can actually achieve, right? And so there, if you get at least 1 crit, the rest of your bullets can be body shots. You'll still kill in 4 shots, and you'll have a time to kill of 1.2 seconds. Which, you know, again, isn't really that great. So what that tells us then, if the median time to kill is slow, this is not a very forgiving gun. It's going to be extremely demanding if you want to get a respectable time to kill. And that makes those high impacts look kind of bad in comparison to the mid-impact scout rifles, just as kind of another comparison. Normally, they don't get a lot of love in the Crucible, right? Because their optimal time to kill is 1 second, which is not very good. You know, that's way slower than most competitive weapons. But for somebody who's just getting into Crucible, say somebody who is listening to the tips at the beginning of this episode, is planning on tuning in next week to learn and continue to get better and get some more advice, this could be a really good weapon, because your median time to kill, in most situations, if you're landing half crits, half-body shots is also 1 second. It's the same as the optimal. And that's because this gun is just so forgiving. So that's really what this spreadsheet is all about. It's kind of highlighting what guns are very reliable, what guns are very forgiving. It's just a different way to look at damage and time to kill. And I think get a more realistic picture for the majority of players on how effective a weapon really is.
And I gotta feel like I need to clarify the reason why I don't have things like this on my spreadsheets, because my spreadsheet is meant to be black and white. It's meant to be the stats and the stats and nothing else. I tried to keep it as objective as possible, because when you start breaking down things into subjective ratings, like I had someone get onto me a while back because I said something along the Finale. I said something along the lines of the Finale's Peril has below average aim assist. Well, for a hand cannon, it does have below average aim assist. And they said, well, for a hand cannon and the mid-impact archetype that can hit max range of 62, that, you know, has this many rounds in the magazine, it actually has above average aim assist. And I was like, well, yes, I know it does. But if I were to do a specific breakdown like that for every single weapon in the game, I'd have 150 different classes of things I'd be breaking down. And none of it would make any freaking sense, you know, because I'd be comparing this rocket launcher to only rocket launchers that have the exact same velocity and can carry three in the chamber with tripod and all these other things. And it just gets way too complicated when I start breaking every single gun down in all these ways, because some people really do hit all their shots. Some people definitely don't hit all their shots. But when a pro player looks at the Mida, he is using the Mida because it has the optimal time to kill. He's using the, you know, Hawksaw because it has the optimal time to kill. He's using the Kossatisk because it has the optimal time to kill. They're not banking on the fact that they're going to miss a shot. They're banking on the fact that they're going to get a kill in three crits, or in three crits in a body for the Mida, you know? And the easiest way I saw to do it was just include the best and the worst case scenarios and let everyone else make of it what they will at their own skill level. You know, that's just because otherwise I would end up going down a rabbit hole and never coming back out. Basically, I'd have all these different custom variations for the pros and cons and all this other stuff. So the whole point of the spreadsheet being there is so you can take it, you can look at it, and you can put it to your own, you know, uses, exactly like Kutch has done today. It's fantastic. And I've seen two or three other people who have sent me spreadsheets, their own custom spreadsheets that they've taken on mine. One of these guys had it to where every single stat was provided with a weight. And depending on the numbers that were there, it gave you a weighted score for each gun in each in a class. So like for hand cannons, range and aim assist were rated really highly, right? And then it scored every single gun on the other side. And you could choose what you wanted to weight highly or not. So for something like a rocket launcher, stability is weighted at zero because stability doesn't matter at all. Whereas inventory is rated pretty highly. Or for something like a shotgun, stability is weighted for a zero because it doesn't really matter. Aim assist doesn't really matter. But max range matters a lot. Equip speed matters a lot. Those things are rated highly. So that's the whole reason that spreadsheet is there, which I actually went through and did a lot more work on it today. Kutch pointed out some places I had some issues where I was saying things were killing. It was more difficult to get kills with them than they should have been. So I went through and fixed all of that stuff. But that's the reason why the spreadsheet is there. It's so you guys can look at it and make of it what you will. You know, I tried to keep it at just the bare minimums. These are the numbers. These are the stats. This is how the guns work. Look at it. Figure it out for yourself.
Which is really awesome. And that actually, in a lot of ways, made it much easier for me to do this and to make this, you know, this kind of derivative spreadsheet. If there had been too much opinion, too much breakdown to a certain extent, it would have been a lot harder for me to get there and to get this kind of, you know, information that I feel is going to be very useful for a very specific set of players, including myself. You know, I wanted to know, you know, auto rifles, are the low impact, you know, really that much more forgiving than the high impact, et cetera, et cetera. I wanted answers to these questions. And because, you know, because we've got that resource out there to draw on, that just made it so easy for me to go and do some simple division and addition and figure it out. And so I really appreciate that. And I hope that we see a lot more people taking this as an inspiration to derive their own stats, derive their own statistics, and share that with us, because I would love to see what other people can do with this data.
And it's pretty cool. I hit 100 viewers at one time on it the other day. I always keep it up on my computer so I can go in and change things when I need to. And I looked up at the top and 100 people were looking at it at one time, wow, which I thought was pretty cool.
That's awesome.
To see that many people were using basically a spreadsheet that I built, you know, that I started building for my own curiosity, because not that I have anything against EXX Trooper, but his hadn't been updated in quite some time. And some of the numbers were just incorrect. And I was like, well, if some of the numbers are incorrect, what if, you know, I've been going off of numbers that are wrong for a while. So I might as well just do all the testing myself and figure it out. So I did. And it's great to see that other people are using it too. So do we have anything else to talk about? I think we've managed to successfully make this not a short episode like we had planned. I'm pretty sure we're already over an hour again. It seems like even when we say it's going to be a 45 minute episode, we never run out of things to talk about with Destiny.
It's true. That's why we're all still here in year three. So
exactly. And I'm hoping to be here in year four too, and past that. But I'm fine wrapping it up now if you guys are as well.
Yeah, I don't want to go any further down the rabbit hole.
All right. And next week we'll be back with some tips for getting good, some real in-depth tips for getting good.
Get good.
Keep an eye out for my gameplay review, which I'll be posting. Again, credit to Gentlelectual for that gameplay. Keep an eye out for Kutch's new median time to kill breakdown, which he'll be posting. And keep an eye out for Cougar getting to the lighthouse and hopefully helping some other people on his Twitch channel get there as well.
And I look forward to hearing, actually, the suggestions on streamers to watch. I would love to hear what you guys have to say, because I'd love to check these out myself. I'm always looking to find someone that I can basically steal from to get better.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you guys for tuning in, and we'll see you next week. Bye.
Y'all have a good one.
Sayonara.